This is The Cutting Room Floor, with your hosts, Eric and Alex. The Cutting Room Floor features discussions that contain spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Certainly giving us a beautiful day today, huh?
Well, Flanders.
Doing a little yard work, huh?
Who told? Marge, beer me.
Say, Simpson, I've got some time-release granules that'll get rid of that crabgrass in just a half a jiff.
Crabgrass? What are you talking about? Where?
Well, there. There. And there's a big patch over there.
There's nothing wrong with crabgrass. It just has a bad name, that's all. Everyone would love it if it had a cute name like Elfgrass.
Hi, welcome to The Cutting Room Floor. I'm Alex.
And I'm Eric.
According to the British Film Institute, at the turn of the century, approximately 350 major releases were issued into theaters. By 2013, that number had almost doubled. In fact, 51 more films were produced and released between 2012 and 2013 alone. As you can imagine, it'd be easy to get lost in that sea of celluloid. Whether it's because of the increasingly stiff competition, a film simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time, or what have you, there are any number of reasons a film might go unnoticed or underappreciated. Here are four films that we believe are underrated and deserve a closer look.
Well, that was really stupid, Peck.
Don't call me a Peck.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Peck? Peck?
Peck, 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 Peck!
You be careful. I am a powerful sorcerer. See this acorn? I'll throw it at you and turn you to stone.
Ooh. I'm really scared. No, don't! Don't! There's a peck here with an acorn pointed at me!
I wouldn't want to waste it.
Ha! Peck! 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 Peck!
For my first film that I had down, I have the film Willow.
Okay.
This was my Lord of the Rings before there was a Lord of the Rings.
Right.
This was basically... This and the Hobbit cartoon were the extent of my, like, high fantasy...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it stars Warwick Davis.
Uh-huh.
And Val Kilmer in an awesome... As, like, a barbarian warrior swordsman guy.
Right.
And it's just a fun movie. It's... I mean, yes, it might be a little cliche. There are... Well, not necessarily hints to Star Wars. It was written by George Lucas, the story was.
And it's a Lucasfilm production.
It's a Lucasfilm production. It's directed by Ron Howard.
Okay.
And it came out in 1988.
Okay.
Basically, you know, it's your typical fantasy story beat. It's basically a human child falls into the hands of Warwick Davies.
Okay.
And he has to go on an adventure... To just protect this child because it's being hunted down by an evil sorceress queen.
Okay.
Because it has, like, there's a prophecy that this
mm-hmm.
child will bring the downfall of this evil sorceress.
Okay.
And it's just, it's a fun movie. There's lots of good drama in it, lots of good action. There's a ton, it's also really, lots of good comedy in
right.
it, too. You have these characters called brownies. They're basically just little people.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, they're, like, 3 inches tall.
Okay. Oh, like, little, like, legitimately.
legitimate little people.
Okay.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, obviously, maybe when I was younger, I had, you know, like, one of them falls into a pint of beer.
Okay.
So he's, like, swimming in it. And the counselor's like, beer! And one of the other funny bits is, Val Kilmer's character, Mad Mardigan, is, he offered to take the child, but then, through a series of events, he loses the child.
Okay.
The child gets kidnapped again by some other characters. And so Willow runs into him at this tavern, and Mad Mardigan is basically hooking it up with this, with this chick. And her husband is about to walk in. So he cross-dresses and, you know, acts like, and of course, the husband being a complete sexist pig.
Right.
He's trying to hit on him. and then all of a sudden the bad guys, guards come in.
Uh-huh.
One of them is led by the sorceress's daughter, you know, real tough-as-nails woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's totally playing along with Mad Mardigan, and then finally she's like, "You're no woman." And, you know, she...
It's a man, baby!
Yeah, so she tosses off his disguise,
mm-hmm.
and then the husband's like, "Not a woman! Not a woman!" And then, you know, Mad Mardigan's like, "Gentlemen, meet Lug!" And then he ducks out of the way, and the husband, like, decks one of the guards, and mayhem ensues.
Right. Big bar brawl.
Yeah, a big bar brawl. But, yeah, it was a fun movie.
Right.
Like, it also traumatized me as a child, because there was a scene where the evil sorceress turns all the good guys into pigs.
Okay.
It freaked the crap out of me when I was young. Because, like, it's done with, like, prosthetics and stuff, but you hear, like, you know, squealing and teeth are growing and all stuff. I'm like, ooh.
Right. So what do you feel makes it underrated? Just, do you think it gets overshadowed by, like, other Lucasfilm productions, or?
Yeah, I think that, and also the fact that it was the 80s, and right. there was, like, a dime a dozen fantasy movies that came out.
It got mixed up
in the shuffle, and...
Gotcha.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it, but yeah, I definitely think it's an underrated gem.
Are you watching closely? Look closer. Never show anyone. They'll beg you and they'll flatter you for the secret, but as soon as you give it up, you'll be nothing to them. You understand? Nothing. The secret impresses no one. The trick you use it for.
If you ask anybody to give you the name of a Christopher Nolan film, you're going to hear something from the Dark Knight trilogy. You're going to probably hear Inception, maybe Memento. But for me, The Prestige is just such a good film. Mm-hmm. And it's not like that people don't recognize that. It's just that I think that between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, all the hype was going toward what's coming after The Dark Knight, you know.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Batman Begins, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And, but just with Christopher Nolan and Jonathan Nolan, they turned out just a brilliant dark story based on the novel by Christopher Priest. Have you ever read the book?
Yeah, I think I actually lent it to you.
Did you? Okay, maybe that's what happened. I mean, I read it. It's good. The movie, I think, is better.
Yeah, yeah.
The book and the movie are two almost totally different things.
Oh, yes. I did enjoy how the novel was basically, the chapters were basically journal entries.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was cool.
Which they then took into the movie with mm-hmm. them reading each other's journals.
Right, yeah, that was cool. But I think, like, the movie just has more flair. I think that it captures that spirit of the novel, but really just turns it into something totally different. But The Prestige has everything you'd expect from a Christopher Nolan film. It's got phenomenal writing, superb acting, nonlinear storytelling, and Michael Caine. So, but it's set during the turn of the century and centers around two friends turned rival magicians wrapped in a brutal game of one-upsmanship with one another after a trick goes tragically wrong. I think the thing that that really just got me was just how... Gosh, I mean, it's hard to find that there's a protagonist in this film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both of them just do such terrible things to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, though, because you like both of them. It's hard. I don't know that you can ever find a role with Hugh Jackman in that you don't like him.
Uh-huh.
You know? And Christian Bale is charismatic, too. So it's hard because you don't know which one of them to root for. At the same time, you kind of want both of them to fail.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's just so many things that happen that it's just dark and tragic. And, I mean, I think anybody would be hard pressed to, I mean, it's got one heck of a twist of an ending.
Oh yes, it does.
And I think my initial reaction, we've talked about this before, was that, as soon as it ended, I wanted to watch it again. Just because mm-hmm. there's so many things that you, when you rewatch it, you pick up on that you missed the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, though, I mean, I just feel it's largely underrated just because it's sandwiched in between Batman Begins and the gold standard of Batman films in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And so this is a smaller film, but I think it deserves that same, you know, when you talk about what are the best Christopher Nolan films, I think this deserves to be in that upper echelon.
Uh-huh.
So I think it just deserves to be up there with Inception.
Hanzo was a mighty samurai, but he was alone. His family taken from him, his kingdom in ruins, and his army destroyed by the dreaded Moon King. You may recall, Hanzo was roaming the distant farlands in search of a magical suit of armor, the only weapon in the whole world that could protect him from the power of the Moon King. This armor was made up of three pieces. The first...
Oh, I know! The Sword Unbreakable!
My other film that I have for underrated is Kubo and the Two Strings.
Okay. And I've not seen that, so...
It came out in 2016.
Yeah, it's recent.
Yeah. And the basic premise is a young boy named Kubo must locate a magical suit of armor worn by his late father in order to defeat a vengeful spirit from the past. One thing that I think is just awesome about this, this is done by the same people who made Coraline.
Okay.
So it's completely claymation, stop motion.
Okay, yeah.
Animated. And with a part with... So even just that alone, right. I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's unprecedented now.
Yeah,
so that's unprecedented, like, but I can't talk.
That is amazing, you know, like that they were able to pull that off. And I just liked the... it's set in like, you know, kind of like a feudal Japan type time period. But it's also very mystical, you know, like you have, like whenever Kubo plays his guitar, like stuff happens. He's able to like, you know, he cuts up origami, you know, makes origami figures, okay. And then he starts playing and through the magic of his playing, he can bring these origami characters to life.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. So it's cool. Plus I also just liked the overall kind of theme.
Okay.
Of, like, family and just stuff like that. And it was just one of those movies that when my wife and I saw it, when the credits rolled, we were just like, that was a good movie.
Right.
Yeah, I just think it's underrated just because, I mean, first of all, I mean, how often do you see a stop motion movie nowadays?
About as often as you see a 2D movie.
Yeah.
You know? Animated movie.
Yeah, so, like, that in and of itself makes it kind of special. Mm-hmm. And I think it just, again, got, you know, it came out in August, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's the dumping ground.
Yeah.
I mean, and not that you can't have good movies that come out in August, but...
Yeah.
I mean, you tell me a movie's coming out in August, and I'm probably going to be like, yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it just got lost in the shuffle.
Do you think that may have been just the studio not having faith in it?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I don't remember how well Coraline did.
Oh, okay. And
they've had a couple of other... They've done, like, two or three types of these movies.
Right.
Like, this is, like, their fourth one, I think. So, and they've all been stop motion.
Right.
You know.
I mean, that's cool. That's just awesome. Something totally different. Because, yeah, I mean, I think the only place you find 2D animation now is on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything major...
Or a Studio Ghibli creation.
Right, yeah. Anything else that you see is going to be... CGI animated, which is fine, but that stop motion is gonna set it apart. You know, the only other one I can think of that comes to mind is the Shaun the Sheep movie.
Yeah,
and that's a fun movie too. but yeah, that's cool that they put it out. It just makes me wonder if that was the reason for that August release date. It was just, you know, the studio just being like, well, it's not going to compete against whatever Disney's putting out, so we'll just throw it here.
We'll just throw it here.
It's like, that's sad.
Yeah.
I'm just, conjecture right now. But
Yeah.
Hey, what you got here in the tree? How about that pistachio ice cream?
No, wasabi.
Oh, same old. What's up with you? That looks delicious.
A little more, please.
It is free, right? Keep it coming. A little more. Come on, let's go. It's free. You're getting there. Scoop. There you go. Now that's a scoop of ice cream.
Okuyami moshiagimasu.
Well, that's funny, because the other movie I have is Cars 2. Hear me out. So, I mean, really, though, Pixar has, like, when it comes to, like, studios, they have, like, an almost unprecedented, you know, track record. Like, I think every movie that they've put out has, like, a fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, except for one. And this is that one. The Cars franchise, though, is an outlier in and of itself. Sure, Toy Story is about toys, but this is, like, the most, like, toyetic brand.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go into a Toy Story without finding shelves, or even, like, Target or something, you know, shelves of these, you know, Pixar cars. You know, Toy Story, in spite of that, has, like, tons of heart. I think Cars kind of gets a bad rap just because they're more, like, just fun movies. You know, they're not, like, heavy on, like, the moral or, you know, punching you in your heartstrings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Inside Out and Up and Coco, you know. but they're just fun movies, you know. And I think because they've got that Pixar banner on them, everybody was kind of expecting, like, you know,
pull at your heartstrings.
Yeah.
And there were moments.
Yeah, yeah.
The ending race in the first one.
Yeah, definitely. And this one, though, like, went in a completely different direction.
See, I never saw this one because I heard it was horrible.
So it's a spy spoof.
Which I think sounds awesome.
That's the thing. Like, it kind of is, you know? There's all kinds of, you know, just takes on the spy genre with, like, with Cars. And some of the things that they do are just, like, really, really clever. Like, that they have guns and they, like, pop out of, like, the hubcaps, you know? Uh-huh. And I'm trying to think of, like, some of the other things. Like, I mean, James Bond has a gadget for, especially when you go, like, into the pre-reboot Bond.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a gadget for everything. And so the main car, the main spy, Finn McMissile, is kind of like an older, like, British gentle car, you know? And he's got.
Isn't he voiced by Michael Caine?
He is voiced by Michael Caine. And he's got, you know, like, magnets that pop out on his wheels. You know, he's kind of like he's almost like, I guess he was designed after, like, an
Aston Martin.
Yeah. And so he's got, like,
the old, like, Goldfinger car.
Yeah. And so, like, he's got, like, his headlights will fold down and he shoots rockets out of them, you know? Nice. And so it's just really funny in that regard of what they did. I think the reason I think this is underrated is just because
it focuses more on Mater.
There's that, and the Little Mater goes a long way, believe me. But I think it's just that because it had that Pixar banner on it, like, Cars almost seems like, the animation obviously is, like, Pixar, you can't beat that quality. Mm-hmm. But the story is almost like something, like, if it came out under, like, a DreamWorks banner, I think people would be like, bravo, you know, like, like, critically, you know, it would have been like, well done, DreamWorks, you've done it again, you know. But because it was Pixar, it was kind of like, show us what you got, you know?
You're better than this.
Yeah, and it was just like, I just really think that, you know, people weren't willing, or at least critics weren't willing to just sit back and, like, be like, okay, let's just have some fun, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like best animated feature, you know, whatever, but I think it's just, I think that was the biggest thing against it, was, like, it has that Pixar banner on it, and, you know, by golly, give us Inside Out or give us nothing, you know? Just have some fun with it, you know? That's how I felt.
Okay.
Because I'd heard the same thing, like, oh yeah, like, Cars 2 was terrible. And I watched it and I'm like, this is just a fun little movie, you know? So that's just what I think.
Everybody has their cult classic or whatever, you know? It's like, just, if you love a movie, even if everyone else thinks it's stupid and dumb.
Right.
You go ahead and just keep loving that movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. If you know, don't let anybody tell you, you know, a movie's not worth having fun with. Unless it's Birdemic. That movie sucks.
Yes, it does.
That's the one exception to the rule. But yeah. Well, cool. Well, next time we're going to talk about some failed franchises, things that were supposed to get off the ground and just for one reason or another just tanked. So we'll be talking about that.
Thank you for listening to The Cutting Room Floor. Please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. You can email us at thecuttingroomfloorpodcast@gmail.com.